Finally, Woodrow Wilson came to the conference brimming with confidence. The American entry into the war was seen by many as being decisive for the reasons that we indicated in our last lecture. Wilson hoped to see his brainchild, something very close to his heart, a League of Nations created, which would help to resolve international conflicts without resorting to war. This was the international organization that was going to resolve conflict, prevent this kind of horrific tragedy that the world had just experienced. He was confident that he would be able to achieve that goal. Germany had hoped to negotiate on the basis of Woodrow Wilson's 14 points, to use Wilson as the thin edge of the wedge, if you will, to deal with the Allies. The Germans had very little in the way of illusions about what they could expect from the British or the French, but the Americans, they thought, would be more malleable. The Germans, however, discovered that they were not to be permitted a voice in the negotiations at all. They were not to be active members of the deliberations. The Germans' job was to accept the terms dictated to them by the victorious Allies at Versailles. Another key player absent at the negotiations at Versailles were representatives of the new Bolshevik government in Russia. The Bolsheviks were, at this point, international renegades, calling for world revolution, hoping to overthrow the capitalist imperialist powers of the world, which had brought this great war and the wrath of this great war down upon the proletariat of the globe. And hence, the Bolsheviks were also not welcome at the treaty of at the negotiations at Versailles. The conference began its negotiations in this grandiose Hall of Mirrors at Louis XIV's palace, the very same Hall of Mirrors which on January 19, 1871 had witnessed the establishment, the founding of the German Empire, would be the scene of the deliberations. And it became clear fairly quickly that Wilson was going to have his work cut out for him in dealing with particularly Clemenceau and the French. The terms that were ultimately hammered out reflect a far greater influence of Clemenceau and to a lesser extent Lloyd George than that of Woodrow Wilson. The terms of the treaty, and I'm going to talk about it as one treaty when in fact there are a series of special treaties, with one with Austria and a number of the so-called successor states, but the terms of the Versailles deliberations, the deliberations in 1919, would create or recognize the so-called successor states created out of the Habsburg, Romanov, and Hohenzollern empires. New states would come into being, created in the spirit of Wilson's national self-determination of peoples. Frustrated nationalism was one of the major reasons for the outbreak of war in 1914. Wilson believed the national self-determination of peoples was to be a principle embodied in this treaty at Versailles. Consequently, a new Polish state would come into existence, Czechoslovakia, carved out of primarily out of the old Habsburg monarchy, Yugoslavia as well, the South Slav state, the goal of so many Serbian nationalists before the war, also created. The key ingredient, the thrust of the treaty, however, was to deal with Germany. How to deal with Germany? The terms dictated to Germany were certainly not in the spirit of Wilson's 14 points. Germany was forced to agree to pay an unspecified amount in reparations. Germany was going to have to pay the cost of the war. Britain, France, Belgium, all. Well, Britain, France, and Belgium had been seen important areas of their economy devastated by the war effort, northeastern France in particular. And Germany was going to have to pay reparations. Also, as a justification for forcing the Germans to pay reparations, A war guilt clause was added to the treaty.